All right, Dr. Jeremy Tubbs, he's here with us for the West Tennessee music scene. He is the Associate Professor of Teaching and Area Coordinator, Music and Entertainment at the University of Memphis Lambeth campus.
So yeah, thanks for having me.
Yes, we're so glad to have you. So, you know, I'm so interested in you. We're talking about the music scene here in West Tennessee, but I want to know more about you. So tell us, where is your passion for music come from?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember, actually. It's one of those things that I describe as like I was 4 or 5 years old, and I went to a piano that was in our house, and I started like plucking out a melody of Jingle Bells at Christmas time, and I'd heard the song, and you know, my mother can tell the story better, but I basically was playing it, you know, just from ear. And she recognized that that was, you know, something kind of special. So within a year or two, she had researched and found a teacher that would start to teach me. And I don't really remember actually the first lesson or the first time I naturally read music or whatever. I just, at some point, I realized, oh, I can play guitar and I can read music and I can. So it was all sort of like anything else that you do at such a young age that you adapt to it without any knowledge of when it actually started. So my passion was pretty early on. And my mom had records, and I would listen to those records. And they were surf music from the 60s and Beatles and Rolling Stones and things like that.
Stuff.
So it was great music.
Yeah.
You know, I remember vividly, you know, pulling out that, you know, the first Beatles record, which is Meet the Beatles, mm-hmm. and, you know, 1964, and putting that LP on the record player and listening to those, you know, wonderful, you know, hits that they had. You know, I Want to Hold Your Hand and Please Please Me and all those songs that were just part of my early, you know, development there. So, yeah, that's how it all started. I just don't kind of remember when and how.
Yeah, you just know it was for you.
It was there from day one. And my mother was a musician and did it as a hobby.
I was going to ask you that. So, musician.
She could play piano. Okay. She could play drums a little bit, actually. She was not a professional. She was just a hobbyist.
Okay.
And she did it kind of just for fun, you know, and she was not a professional musician. She was a school teacher, you know, and my dad was a law enforcement. So I came from a very blue-collar family, and my dad didn't play music at all and didn't really sing, didn't really listen to music at all. It was very, you know, not into music, but my mom was, and I picked up on that from her.
Did she ever tell you any stories of you in the womb if she played music or?
Not really.
No.
I think, though.
I always wonder about that.
Well,
say that.
I don't know. She might actually surprise me if I asked her that. She goes, yeah, I used to play Mozart or whatever. And I don't know, but she's never told me that. But I think I gravitated towards music at such a young age that she recognized it. And I was always dancing and singing and acting like I was playing on stage when I was a kid. You know, this is all things I don't remember. These are things
were told to you.
Yeah, 3 or 4 years old. Yeah. And she told me later on, like, yeah, you went to the piano and started playing Jingle Bells, you know, like by ear. And that's when I knew. And she asked me once, she said, would you like to play piano or guitar? And I said, no, I want to play drums. And she was not.
Yeah, she wasn't expecting that one.
She was not hip to that. She was like,
she's
no,
like,
one or the other.
Yeah. I don't know about the drums.
The drums are not going to be in our house.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
So tell us about your role as an educator at the University of Lambeth.
Well, I started out wanting to be, you know, a touring musician, and the dream was to always be on the road, and I did that for a while. And sort of while I did that, I never stopped going to school. I actually kept learning. And that goes not only, people always think like college or grad school or whatever, trade school or whatever, or conservatory of music, or when you're in the music world, you have all these options. And I kind of did all of those, actually, and never stopped doing that. In fact, I still do some type of educational program to learn, because technology changes so much, and how you know, do a certain art form. Like today, I mean, the big thing today is AI. I mean, I'm learning a lot about AI right now and trying to figure out how to use that to my advantage, and rather than sort of a what people call a cheat. You know, it's not a cheat if you know how to use it to help. So I'm learning that right now. So my education was a big part of that, and I just never stopped going to school. But I also was a touring musician, toured for 7 years like professional touring musician. So I learned it from the road. I learned, you know, when I was making records, and I probably, you know, during that time period, or over the course of my whole career, I've always made music. Like, it's making art, right? Yeah. It's like painting, sculpting,
yeah,
dancing,
it really is.
Acting. Exactly. Music is the same thing. And so by doing that, you make records and you work with producers and you work in music cities. And so Nashville, Memphis, Atlanta, New York, LA, Austin, Chicago, you work in these cities and you go there and you do music stuff with music people. And you pick up different things from each one of those. And after 6-7 years of doing that, it gave me enough experience to where I was like, they don't really teach this in school. And so I brought the idea later on to the dean in Memphis, and he was like, I love the idea. Let's make this program happen. So we started the Music and Entertainment Program, which is that program. It's, you know, some people say, or if you were to describe it, you learn to play an instrument, piano, mm-hmm. violin. Maybe you learn how to sing opera, mm-hmm. and you go do that. You sing opera. You play in an orchestra. Mm-hmm. And in the modern sense, you know, just in a short period of time, now we're getting to the place where, you know, what actually does Taylor Swift do and how does she do it? You know, what is a concert, you know, in a popular music field look like, you know, whether it be hip hop or rock or pop or jazz or whatever. And so those programs are fairly new. They're not old programs, whereas opera has been studied for 400 years. You know, piano has been around for hundreds of years, you know, and violin and whatever. And so the pedagogy that goes into learning how to play an instrument is a classical approach, a traditional approach, where my program is more of a commercial music studies. It's something that's ever-changing. It never stays the same. You know, it's always something new and different, you know.
Yeah, but how interesting for you, though.
It's a lot of work, too.
Yeah, I bet.
It's a lot of work. So I love it, though. I do it with passion, mm-hmm. you know. So, you know, I play an instrument that can be a traditional instrument, you know, but most of the time guitar is a very folk instrument. Mm-hmm. It's a portable instrument. It's something people can move around and use. It's also a harmonic instrument. Like a violin or a trumpet is more of a melodic instrument. It's mm-hmm. more playing one note at a time. Okay. You need multiple instruments to give you chords, multiple instruments to give you, you know, dynamics.
Yeah.
Whereas a guitar can be all of that in one thing.
Yeah,
you
true.
Know, so it's really guitar and piano are the two instruments that can achieve that. So if you play a piano and you're playing a harmonic and a melodic instrument, and some people sing, Billy Joel, for example, mm-hmm. you know, Lady Gaga plays piano and mm-hmm. she sings. Mm-hmm. Same thing with guitar. Bob Dylan plays a guitar and sings, and so it's a harmonic instrument. And so I'm in that instrument lives in more of a commercial music world rather than like a piano that lives in both of those worlds equally. You know, so that's. That's kind of how that works for me. So,
Cool, though. So, I know you talked about, you know, you said 7 years of touring.
7 years of professional touring.
Professional.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, some places you've been?
All over the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. From, you know, Europe to Alaska to, you know, pretty much every state in the United States, Canada, you know, the UK, Germany, Belgium, France, Holland, Italy. All over that. There's some places that I would love to. I haven't been to Japan yet. I'd love to go to Japan at some point. So, but our music was not translated over there as much as it was in Europe or the UK. But every state in the union, pretty much, I've been to. And you know, when you tour, you do develop regional. You know, we weren't a huge band, but we had regional following. So we had a huge following in Houston, Texas, for example. We would go to Houston once a month for years, you know. So we had this great following in Houston. And Florida, we'd be in Pensacola, like, you know, every other month, you know, playing shows on the beach. And then Green Bay, Wisconsin, for some reason. We were always in Green Bay. And we actually, 1 year, 2004, our music was the official we had one song on the official Green Bay Packers soundtrack gave out to the players, you know. And there was one time I got to sit in Brett Favre's locker, you know. It was it's fun. We were never famous. We had some songs, and you know, we had a little following, but we were able to do it full time and make a living and have a good time doing it. But it gave me, again, making records and touring and doing the business side of it all and meeting people in Nashville, mostly Nashville, was the key that linked sort of like what I wanted to do when I decided to stop touring full time. And when you have kids, I had two kids. Yeah. I was like, I'm going to stay at home more.
Yeah, understandable. Yeah.
So I luckily enough, I got my doctorate in music and I was able to do that full time more as a coach. Now I'm coaching and mentoring, or hopefully giving people, you know, the love and joy of music through that, my experiences and what I hear from other people too, you know, because it's not just, you know, it's always two degrees of separation for me, because I have so many of my friends who, you know, work for Justin Timberlake, mm-hmm. work for Bruno Mars, or Little Big Town, or you know, whatever the artist is. I mean, I'm kind of 2 degrees separation from those. So I hear the story, like one of my best friends is running front of house for Justin Timberlake right now, and so he's running sound for Justin Timberlake, and so he calls and tells me the stories, and he knows the stories, right? He knows what's going on, so it's kind of fun to hear those and not have to be like full-time touring around the world. You know,
and you know, you got the kids too.
The kids are good. So,
Well, let's bring it back here home here to West Tennessee. So, give me some insight when it comes to music history in West Tennessee. What makes it so rich here?
So, I was asked to write the article for the bicentennial, and I did a deep dive research project into it and trying to figure it out. And the simple truth is that it's all about geography. It really is. It's what happened here in West Tennessee. Who came here? And then the blending and the merging of cultures. You had, if we look at the data is that about half of the population in the 1850s, 60s were African descent, and half were European descent. Mm-hmm. Almost split. It's like 51-49%. So the African culture brought in their traditions and their music, and the Europeans brought, you know, their instruments and their traditions and stuff. But this was not built around like traditional, like hierarchy. You know, it wasn't like, you know, the greatest opera singers or the greatest piano players. Yeah. It was more of, again, folk tradition.
Yeah.
They brought in their instruments that they could play and could be transported, and they're portable. But we also had, you know, construction of railroads, the rivers that brought people in. The Forcadere was a lot bigger then, so people could travel down it actually and come into West Tennessee. But another large aspect to our music heritage is church, the bringing of religion into the area. So you had, of course, Methodism, you had Baptists, Episcopalians, and that all started to kind of reverberate through like the counties in West Tennessee. Churches were started. I mean, if you look at like the dates of a lot of these churches, you'll realize, oh, this church was founded in 1875, 1881, 1896, whatever it is. And I mean, churches downtown, like right here, you know. So, and we were truly a hub city even back then. We were truly the center of West Tennessee. Memphis had its own thing, you know. Once you get to the Tennessee River, of course, you know, you have Jackson. So Memphis is its own thing, but the Jackson is sort of like that mental middle hub of West Tennessee.
Yeah.
So all the counties became sort of like reliant on Jackson. You know, a people, you know. Mm-hmm. However, what was the first, or what were the things that people were doing here? It wasn't like Wall Street, and it wasn't like London or other major cities. Mm-hmm. It was agriculture. So agriculture, farmers, cotton, soybeans, things like that. So you had a lot of blue collar people who were, you know, working during the day, but then playing music on the weekends.
Yeah, that was the entertainment. Mm-hmm.
And it was, that's how it works. So you blend church culture, church music, with African rhythms and culture and European tradition, mm-hmm. and you get a unique blend that doesn't happen really anywhere else in the world, actually. So it was a soup, a chili of uniqueness that gave us that. And we are known, if you look at, like, somebody might say, like, West Tennessee's known for rock and roll or blues or rockabilly or whatever, and I think that's a okay statement to say. I mean, but it's more than that. I think the music is also a cultural thing. It's part of our DNA, that people who came here and have been here and then played the music here over the years are part of that, you know, ecosystem of, yeah. You know, we have unique weather, we have unique culture, we have uniqueness.
Very that, unique.
Yes, yes. It's so music is a uniqueness. Even people who are not from here that mm-hmm. do come here, that kind of settles into their soul.
Absolutely,
almost.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's soulful. And I've been around the world now to know that, you know, I could be in a nightclub or go to a music venue in, you know, Wisconsin mm-hmm. or Minnesota, and it doesn't sound the same. It just doesn't sound the same.
No.
There's something soulful about it. There's a soul to West Tennessee. And people, you know, will say the same thing about Memphis, of course, and Nashville has its own scene as well. I mean, I think that Nashville's varied, you know. I mean, I love it. It's like, again, Justin Timberlake, Chris Stapleton doing that mashup together. Yep. It was like, you know, Nashville, are you ready for a little bit of Memphis? You know, there's a soul to it all that's in West Tennessee that's a little bit different. So between the two rivers, Mississippi and the Tennessee River, it blends up into, you know, a little bit into Kentucky and then down into Mississippi as well. You know,
I can see that a
it's
bit.
Part of that as well. It doesn't stop at the state lines.
Mm-hmm. No.
So
let's talk about some notable musicians that are in from this area, around this area.
So. I mean, everybody knows that, you know, and I'm very into the history of it all, but Carl Perkins is, you know, of course, sort of like the crowning achievement of the music business and music industry and what he did, and even what he does even past his passing with the Carl Perkins Center for Child Abuse and all the things that he's really, you know, again, historically, you know, probably, you know, the most known mm-hmm. Jackson musician, right?
Yeah.
But we have talented songwriters that have come from here, people have been on Broadway, people who have been in movies. We've got great teachers as well. We have a lot of really good musical, you know, entities in the area, but you can look at, like, from really, you know, the dawn of, within the last 150 years or so of Jackson music, a lot of influential people have been around. It's too many to say. I mean, I could sit and list them all. Yeah, I mean, but there's a lot. The Jackson Amp at the farmer's market has that mural up, and, you know, Dubois Holland, you know, and Carl Perkins and Gil Scott Heron's on there. I mean, there's a lot of people, you know, Sonny Boy Williamson, you know, but even in a modern sense, a lot of people are doing great music. I mean, I have former students that are on the road full time playing with people, doing, you know, own recording studios. They're running sound for this person. They're doing music. And I've always been a proponent of, it's not about being famous, it's about making a living.
Yeah.
And do it and creating good art.
That's right.
And it's either you're creating it on stage.
And if you're passionate about it.
Yeah, passionate about it.
You know?
Yeah.
If you like what you're doing.
Yeah. You know, I don't need much.
Yeah.
I don't need much at all. I can survive off very little. And if I'm doing music full time, that's fine. So I'm good. I'm good to go. I don't need expensive anything, actually.
So talking about your students and some who are out there right now on the road and just other local musicians, what opportunities are there available for them?
The music industry right now is actually crazy. There's so many opportunities. We've crossed a threshold of, you know, you can work making the records, you can work at producing the records, you can work as a full-time artist on stage performing songs or performing music. You could work as a tech. A tech basically somebody who maybe runs sound, runs monitors, maybe even fixes the guitars that, you know, or tunes the guitars on the side of the stage and hand it off, you know. But we also have technology, which, you know, you can work, you know, at a streaming service like Spotify or Pandora or YouTube. You can work in publishing where you're administrating song rights, negotiating deals with movies. Every streaming service and network has to have music, and they have to negotiate the rights to that music. And so there's that side of it. There's the legal side, the entertainment law.
And just to see how that has changed over time.
Yeah.
And how many opportunities there are now for students or just musicians out there. They don't even have to be kids. And, you know, just to see that. How is that?
Well, it's...
Because when you were on the road, were all of those opportunities available?
It was different.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a lot different. We were still, you know, for example, for me, merchandising was a key ingredient to it all, selling T-shirts. And,
yeah.
And it still is.
Yeah.
It's different now, though. You can sell it. I mean, I remember this. It was a big deal to take credit cards. You know, we had to really work hard to make sure that we could use a credit card, right?
And now all you got to do is just plug the Square into your phone. Or you don't even have to use the Square anymore.
You don't have to use the Square anymore.
Send the money.
So we're, and nowadays you see somebody and they'll have a code and you scan the code and you can pay and tip and all that stuff. So we're at a different place in history and it's going to get even more interesting. So I encourage students to keep an open mind and keep you know, a passion again for it. And I'm surprised. I mean, one of my students right now, he's kind of big on TikTok and he's got a lot of followers and he has a fingerprint. It's what he does, and he does it well, and he posts a lot and he gets a lot of responses and a lot of likes, and he does that full time. I mean, I know a lot of YouTubers that are, you know, they make a really good living at posting their content.
And the advantages they have nowadays are just
absolutely
unlimited, really.
Yeah, I mean, how many people, you know, are making a living off their social media platforms?
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah, a lot.
A lot.
Just get online and you'll see.
Yeah, it's astronomical, actually. So I encourage the students to be open and to be artistic and creative with their art. Like, try to find a way to make a living that way. There's no one answer. I mean, I was talking to a student yesterday, actually, and I said, like, no one has done it the same way. You know, if you watch any biopic, you know, if you look at Walk the Line with Joaquin Phoenix playing Johnny Cash, you look at the new Bob Dylan biopic with Timothy Chalamet, and they're all different. It's all a different way of how they made it. You know, it's like Bob Dylan walks into, you know, a room and plays guitar, and everybody's like, whoa, this guy's great. You know, the Beatles did it differently. You know, Metallica did it differently. You know, Lady Gaga did it differently. Yeah. So there's not one way. And so I'm trying to always encourage them to, like, find their path, but don't think that you're going to be the next, you know, Led Zeppelin.
Yeah. Don't give up.
Don't give up. Right.
Lots of opportunities.
That's right. It's like, I have known a lot of musicians that have not become famous, but they work cruise ships and they make really good money.
Oh yeah.
You know,
on those cruise ships, you do make pretty good money. Especially
you make
performing.
Good money.
Yeah.
Yes. You make good money. I have a friend of mine who lives in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And he is sort of like the band director for a party band.
Okay.
And they play all over the Midwest. And they're making, like, crazy money just playing party band music, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So they set up...
Tell me more about the party band. Like,
they play covers, of course. They're not playing original music, but they play music that everybody knows. And so they do weddings and corporate functions and whatever celebration.
Really,
right?
Anything you want.
But they show up,
right?
Right, they'll do anything. Yeah. They show up, it's professional lights, sound, they have a dance routine, it's a very professional, you get what you pay for, right? and they show up and, you know, they'll play a corporate gig one night, $40,000. Bam.
Wow.
You know, yeah. And so that's what he does full time, and he makes really good money doing it. And so it's kind of finding your way. I know another guy who lived in Boston, and he decided to move to the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And because he was an American and he was a musician, and he sang really well, he was asked to join this band in the Philippines. And of course, he could sing Steven Tyler and Aerosmith music really well.
Wow, yeah.
And they tour all over the Philippines as sort of a rock band.
Very cool.
With an authentic American singer.
Yeah.
And they make a killing. You know, wow. So it's just it's finding your thing. It's yeah. finding your niche there. You know, it's kind of a cool way to do it. But I'm a true believer of you can't give up. You have to just stay the path. I mean, you know who Muddy Waters was? McKinley Morganfield was his real name. He grew up in Mississippi. He moved to Chicago and he became a kind of a handyman. He worked odd jobs, but he played guitar and blues in the 40s and 50s, and became a very, 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 very good local musician around Chicago. Leonard Chess shows up, starts Chess Records. Muddy starts playing at Chess as his house band, basically with his house band, and starts recording all the records, and he just stays at it and gets older. And then during the blues revival of the 60s, the Rolling Stones decide to name their band the Rolling Stones after a Muddy Waters lyric, and they're a big fan of Muddy Waters, and you know, as an old man, he becomes famous and starts touring all over the world, and is still one of the most influential blues men of the 20th century, and it's all about stamina. There was a great story about, like, you know, somebody walks into Chess Records and they're looking for Muddy Waters, and they walk past this guy who's painting the wall, you know, and that's Muddy Waters.
He's painting,
like doing maintenance on the building, yeah. You know, but Muddy was, again, staying humble, staying true to yourself and having stamina. But and the other things is, you know, basically resiliency. You take sort of like a sport, let's say baseball.
Mm-hmm.
You're considered an all-star if you get 3 hits out of every 10 at-bats. Yeah. That means 7 at-bats,
yeah.
You get out.
Yeah.
7 at-bats, you strike out, you ground out, you fly out, you yep. get out, okay? So 3 times you're successful out of every 10 times, and you're an all-star.
Yeah.
You're a good player.
Yeah, that's a good point there.
Okay?
Yeah.
So 3 times you get some sort of hit. Okay, and you bat 300, and that's the pinnacle. You know, if you bat 250, that's the average.
Yeah,
that means okay. you're successful 1 out of every 4 times.
Yeah, wow.
Which is a whole different. That's 4 times out of 16 times yeah. that you actually get a hit.
Yeah.
So that's the average, and if you go below 200, mm-hmm. you're probably going to get sent to the minors.
Yeah.
Okay. So I tell students, you're going to get told no, or that can't happen, mm-hmm. or that's not possible a lot.
Yeah.
But think like a baseball player.
Uh-huh.
That you got to get up to the plate, and you have to try. Mm-hmm. And you're going to strike out. And you're going to strike out.
Yep.
And you're going to ground out.
Yep.
And then you're going to get lucky, and the ball's going to come right down the middle, and you're going to just smack it hard. And it can go anywhere. It can go down the line. It can go into the center field. It could go over the fence. You don't know. But You're training right now to stand in the box, to be able to hit. That's what you're training for. You're not going to hit right now.
No.
You're going to pay some dues.
Yeah.
The Nashville term is 5 years. It's always, you got to spend 5 years in Nashville before you finally get your break. You know, I heard it my whole life.
Your whole life.
Yeah. So it's, you have to pay your dues. You have to get past that point. Yeah. So, but I try to tell them, you know, be resilient mm-hmm. about it. You're going to hear no. It's okay. Don't worry about it.
Just keep going.
Just keep going.
Yeah.
It's okay.
So tell me a little bit about Jackson Area Music Society.
So
Jackson Hidden Tracks, too. I think there's two.
Yeah, it's two different things, but we partner together, okay?
Yeah, tell me.
So I'm going to give you the Cliff Notes version of it all. So a couple years, 10 years ago or so, I noticed that it was kind of like no one knew who played where in the area. No one was... like, who's playing at Redbones? Who's playing at the Tavern? Who's playing at the Amp? Who's playing at, you know, the tap.
Yeah.
No one knew. And you had to go to their Facebook page or their website.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like some of the places never
really
posted.
Searching.
Yeah, yeah. Never posted. And you just didn't know.
Pretty much by word of mouth, you'd figure.
Word of mouth of the local artists. Like, oh, we're playing at Redbones. Mm-hmm. We're playing at the tap. We're playing at the tavern, you know, this Friday. And it might be the day of, you know. And it's so I started the Jams page, the Jackson Area Music Society page, to be a promotion communication hub for that. Cool. So, we just try to post all the information we can about who's playing where every week, and it's been going on for 11 years now, almost. I think, yeah, 11 years, almost 11 years in September. It will be 11 years in September. So,
how do we access that? Where is
it? It's on the face. It's on Facebook. Yeah. It's on the Facebook.
The Facebook. I heard you say the Facebook. That's right.
It's on the Facebook.
Yeah. On Facebook.
It's JAMS. If you just type that in, it'll come up. Jams. People can post. They can post their original music on there. They can post their, hey, we're playing here. I collect the data every week and then make a post of who's playing in West Tennessee at various places. And if there's an artist in West Tennessee that's maybe playing in Nashville, and I'll include that, like, hey, catch so-and-so at this place in Nashville. If you're in Nashville this weekend, that's a Jackson artist or a West Tennessee artist. And so we're always doing that. So that's what that is. Jackson Hidden Tracks kind of came off of that, and that's creation of the Tennessee Tourism Board, visittn.com, visitjacksontn.com, and a local creative agency called B3 and Stephanie Riley, who's over they actually take the information I post and they create this beautiful like post every week and make it really nice and put it out across the whole state. It goes into the state tourism board. So, and then I know WBBJ actually does reposts that. So it's all part of that. Yeah. It's all part of that whole process of just communication and information. So
And giving people what they want, honestly, well, because I feel like there's a want for that.
I mean, let's say I want to go to you know, to the river this weekend, and I go to Savannah or Kuntz or whatever, and I'm Freddie T's, or who's playing at Freddie T's this weekend? Oh, I can look at the Jams page, or I'd love to just go sit at Redbones at the bar, and who's playing Saturday night at Redbones? I'm just going to go over there, whatever that may be, you know. So you can access it and know exactly who's playing, or maybe you're really a big fan of a certain person or artist or band, and you go like, I wonder where they're playing at this weekend. You can go to the Jams page and say, oh, there they are, you know, and they're playing.
And maybe even follow them. And,
right. Yeah. Yeah, and they're like, hey, they're playing at Doe's on Tuesday night.
Yep, and then Thursday here.
And, yeah. And so I can go see my favorite local artist at that place, you know.
That's so cool.
That's what Jams is. Yeah. And Jackson Hidden Tracks does the same thing, just takes and then markets it better.
Yeah.
More reach, basically. The Jams page is about 6,500 people.
Wow.
And then Hidden Tracks puts it out to about 60,000 people. Wow. Yeah. So it's a marketing tool.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's a good thing to communicate who's playing where, at what time they're playing, and then giving people a courtesy of, I want to go see live music this weekend. Who do I want to go see? Mm-hmm. And where are they playing?
Yeah.
Or what venue? Or it's just, again, that wasn't available.
That wasn't available.
And so no one knew anything about who's playing where and where they're playing. So
like we said, just by word of mouth or maybe a sticky note tacked to the bulletin board at one of the local bars. Or
It was a free-for-all.
Yeah.
And now it's not. So it's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, Jeremy, it was so nice to chat with you and just to learn more about you. Before we head off, I know you said you always say to your students, just resilience, don't give up. But
Stamina.
Any other advice for local artists or new artists out there?
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest thing is that you've got to make yourself unique. Yeah. You have to practice. You have to, you know, have training in some way. You have to learn, right? You have to learn how to do whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
And so it's good to have mentors, you know, anything you can do to kind of plug in and be a part of something. If you want to run live sound, work at a church and work in the church sound booth for a while and learn some live sound stuff. If you want to play songs, do open mics. Go to karaoke nights and learn how to sing in front of people. I mean, just standing there holding the microphone and singing is a tough thing, so do it more. You know, so it's the biggest thing is to train yourself to get ready. You know, take lessons from somebody. I know, I don't know if you know Billy Strings or not, but Billy Strings, I heard him say it the other day. He goes, "I still have a teacher. I still take lessons."
Yeah.
And he's a tremendous guitar player. Like, yeah. He's super great.
Yeah.
But he still takes guitar lessons.
Yep.
He still takes lessons, you know. So it's training and going out and doing it and then learning your craft, learning that you're not the, you know, understanding that you're part of a community and there's always going to be somebody better than you and there's always going to be somebody that's
yep.
that's up and coming that's yeah. working hard to be where you're at, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's a community, it's a loving community, and I would always encourage people to just be involved with that. Don't put yourself in a position to fail. Yeah. You know, positivity and humbleness and creativity are all part of that process as well. Right. So yeah,
it sure is.
Mm-hmm. It's a good thing, actually.
Yeah. Well, Jeremy, so nice to chat with you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's been great.